Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about opening our eyes to a new view of life. I'm thrilled you joined us today. You know, I'm often asked why I do these podcasts, and the simple answer is, I don't consider myself the best speaker or personality, but my life has been changed, been blessed by podcasts. And when I think about the time and effort those podcasters invested in me, I realize this is a bit of a way to give back. And that's why we are doing Open Your Eyes. So, wherever you are today as you listen, whether in the car or on your daily walk or run, or just part of your daily inspiration time, I hope we can learn something that will help us all to strive to reach our goals and fulfill our purpose. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about this simple principle. Nothing will change in your life until you change something about your life. A few years ago, the Wall Street Journal named Bark Ingalls the Architect and Innovator of the Year for his work on a number of world-renowned projects as the owner of a large architectural firm. But earlier in his life, in his 20s, Ingalls worked at a traditional firm in Copenhagen. Late nights, demanding clients, no creative freedom. He later admitted that he felt trapped in the exact life he didn't want. Nothing was moving. No one was giving him opportunities. His creative ideas were stuck in sketchbooks he never opened. The turning point? Not a job offer, not a competition win, not a promotion. It was a simple internal realization that I won't create anything original if I never create anything on my own time, he said. So he made one small change. Every Saturday morning, he blocked off time for his own projects, experimental, personal, unapproved by anyone. That's it, one structural change. Those Saturday sketches turned into the concepts for his own firm, which went on to design groundbreaking buildings worldwide. This firm didn't start with luck. It started with a change to his Saturday morning, a small change in his weekly work schedule, and a commitment to stay with that small change. And it led to a completely different life for him. Years ago, some of you will remember a famous movie called The Pursuit of Happiness that starred Will Smith, who was playing the part of a real person named Chris Gardner. The movie told Chris's story as he rose from a homeless single father to a finance broker who eventually started and owned his own brokerage firm. But long before the events portrayed in The Pursuit of Happiness, Chris Gardner was working at a medical equipment factory in San Francisco. He didn't have a college degree, financial connections, or a clear path forward. One afternoon, he saw a well-dressed man step out of a red Ferrari. And Gardner asked him what he did, and the man said, "I'm a stockbroker." Gardner wanted that life, but wanting it wasn't enough. He made a quiet, unseen change. He replaced all nighttime TV with 2 hours of studying financial vocabulary, brokerage exam content, and market basics, long before he had any opportunity to use it. No one applauded, no one believed in him, no one even knew. But that two-hour evening study routine rewired his future and gave him the confidence and ideas of how to change his life. It allowed him to speak the language of finance before he ever stepped into an interview. His life didn't change because he wanted more. It changed because he changed. A nightly pattern. Bonnie St. Johns is an American former Paralympic skier, author, and public speaker who lost her right leg below her knee as a child. In college, she worked part-time as a nursing assistant while studying at Harvard. She never considered a future in athletics. But one day at the hospital, she overheard two residents talking about adaptive skiing. She said later that a sentence flashed through her mind. "If I don't change something today, the next 20 years will look exactly like the last 20 years." So she made a tiny, practical decision. Instead of sitting in the cafeteria during lunch, she went to the hospital gym to improve her balance and leg strength every day. She didn't have skis. She didn't have a coach. She didn't even have a plan to compete. But she changed one block of time. And that shift gave her the capacity and confidence to join an adaptive ski program. 4 years later, she won medals in Innsbruck, Her success didn't start on snow. It started in a hospital gym at noon. Louis Van Aan, co-founder of Duolingo, began as an overwhelmed MIT graduate student. He couldn't keep up with the reading load. He felt behind and scattered and mentally overloaded. He didn't need motivation. He needed a different system. So one afternoon, frustrated, he made a small but radical change. He stopped taking notes in sentences and switched to only writing questions and answers, forcing his brain to engage through active recall. The change unlocked everything. He retained more. He understood research faster. He freed mental energy. He accelerated his PhD progress. And that cognitive margin eventually allowed him to develop the prototypes behind CAPTCHA and eventually Duolingo. Millions of people learn languages because one student changed how he wrote notes. Claire Smith grew up on a farm in Northern Ireland and began her career working kitchens in London, washing dishes, prepping vegetables, and occasionally covering shifts at a bar for extra income. She wasn't progressing fast, and she couldn't understand why. She was working harder than everyone around her. One night after a discouraging shift, she asked herself, "Why am I not getting better? I work twice as hard and twice as long as everyone else." Her answer came from watching an older bartender train a rookie. He kept saying, "Ask questions differently. Ask questions that show you want to learn." And that stuck with her. The next morning in the kitchen, Smith changed one thing. Instead of asking, "What do you want me to do?" she began asking, "How can I do this better?" Or, "Why do you prepare it that way?" That's it. Not a new job, not a new city, not a career overhaul, just a new way of asking questions. Well, her curiosity caught the attention of chef mentors, one of whom recommended her to Gordon Ramsay, and she eventually became head chef at Restaurant Gordon Ramsay, the first and only woman in Britain to run a 3-Michelin-star kitchen, and later opened her own world-renowned restaurant named Core. Her trajectory began when she changed how she asked questions. So, what do all these stories have in common? You see, for each of these people, their eventual success started with one simple change. Now, this is an incredibly powerful principle. One leveraged simple change that eventually leads to something bigger and better in your life. Now, if you thought hard, you could probably come up with 2 or 3 stories from your own life or from the lives of people you know in which a change, focused and simple change, led them to reach new heights and even become different and better people. This happens in business as well. Your team may need a change to get where it needs to go. Because the truth is, your life, your business, or anything for that matter, won't change until you change something about your life or business or that thing. You don't need a massive overhaul. You don't need a perfect plan. You don't need a life reboot. You need a lever, one simple lever you can pull today. So pick one thing, a routine, a time block, a question, a method, a habit, an environment. Then change it. Because life doesn't move until you do. And once you change one thing, everything else begins to shift with it. So let me ask you a question. What change do you need in your life today? Think about it now. What change more than any other is needed in your life? Maybe you're saying, "Everything. My life needs to change." Or maybe your answer is the momentum in your business or your habits or anything else. Maybe you've tried to make a change in the past without success. If so, there's good news. Because change is possible and it's simpler than you think. And it's interesting that a small change, a simple change in your life or routine can in fact rewire your future. Does that make sense? It starts to rewire how you think and directs what comes next and leads to ultimate change. So, how do you decide what small fundamental change to make? You may want to consider a structural change. Why? Because time is likely the resource you need to make whatever change is needed. Time to develop a skill, time to spend with people, time to fill your life or habits with other good things. For example, not long ago, I was having a hard time developing relationships with potential partners for our foundation. When I examined my life and schedule, I realized that I had lunch available almost every day of the week. And I started to change my schedule to make lunch a time to develop relationships. This started to rewire my future. By using lunch to get to know people, I've met more people, I have deeper relationships, I have more connections, and the success of our partnerships is increasing. Now, I'm not perfect yet, and not every lunchtime is booked with other people, but I'm on the path, and because I can see the impact of this small change, I'm enthusiastic about doing it as much as I can. You see, when you get some joy and momentum from this small change, it starts to motivate you further. Now, that's something that has worked for me. But here's a few suggestions to help you as you consider what small change you could make. Maybe you could change your morning routine. What happens during the first hour of your workday? Could you change that time to make your work and day better? Maybe your first hour is your commitment hour, in which you do the hardest things first, the things you avoid, like setting appointments with prospects or getting to that thing you've been putting off for so long. The first hour makes all the difference. As the famous book title says, if you eat a frog first thing in the day, the rest of the day will seem pretty good. Meaning if you do the hard things first, then the rest of the day is pretty easy. Or maybe your first hour of the day changes to consistent and meaningful exercise. Perhaps you consider changing your evening pattern. Do you take four nights a week for learning or growing relationships? Do you set aside time to do joyful things? You could change what you measure in your life. Do you measure your self-worth by your hours spent working or business results? Or do you measure people served or kindness extended? You could change where you place your phone. So when you set your alarm, you're forced to get out of bed to turn it off. You could change how you listen to others, how you express love. You could change the last 10 minutes of your workday. This is something that I learned from a friend. Spend the last 10 minutes of your workday texting thank yous to those you noticed or remembered during the day. Let them know you appreciate them, saw them, or are thinking of them. You'd be surprised at what this does for you personally, for your business, and the goodwill you create as a result. Here's the point. Small structural changes in your day can make a huge difference. Now, we often start a small change and lose steam doing it after a while. If you decide to make a small change, then make it non-negotiable and do it for 30 days. Not perfect for 30 days, just consistent. Because what I've learned is that the magic doesn't happen at first. It takes a bit of time before the magic starts to happen. So stay with the change. And do it consistently. And remember, we're talking about small things. 10 minutes at the end of the day. Eating lunch with others who you want to partner with. Small things. Why small things? Because the emotional and mental resistance to small changes is very low. You can make small changes easily. Roz Chass, the celebrated New Yorker cartoonist, said that at this point in her celebrated career, about 90% of her cartoons that she submits for publication are still rejected. And she said earlier in her career, it was much higher. Bob Mankoff, the cartoon editor for The New Yorker, verified that Roz was right. He said that he gets 500 cartoon submissions a week, and the magazine only uses 17. That's a rejection rate of over 96%. As a child, Mankoff liked to draw. He went to LaGuardia High School of Music and Art. You know that school if you ever saw the old movie Fame. And after school, he decided he wanted to be a cartoonist. So he created 27 cartoons. All were rejected. He thought, how could anyone create more than 27? So, discouraged, he decided to become a psychologist, and he went to graduate school. After he finished his doctorate, he realized that he didn't want to be a psychologist. And he landed on the one word that truly was the only way to describe himself, and that was funny. So he decided to do a small thing, a small endeavor towards his true goal. And that goal was to be the best cartoonist in the world. Now, you have to understand that the New Yorker is to cartooning what the Yankees are to baseball. He knew that if he could make that team get a cartoon accepted by the New Yorker, he would be one of the best. So he started to draw in earnest. But little changed. He submitted more than 500 cartoons to the New Yorker for over 2 years, and all were rejected. Finally, he did this small but life-changing thing. He went to the New York Public Library and looked up cartoons in the New Yorker back to 1925, and he really studied them. He thought something might be wrong with his cartoons, like maybe he thought other people were better draftsmen than he was. Not true. Some of the cartoons used worse drawing techniques than his. He thought maybe his captions were too long or short, but that wasn't true either. He thought that maybe others were more funny than him. Not so. Some were more funny and others a little less. But there was something that the published cartoons had that his did not. They made the reader think. Each cartoon had the right amount of wrong. The second thing that was different was this. Each cartoonist had their own unique style. So, Mankoff adjusted his approach. He used his understanding of psychology to make people think, and he adopted his own style and used a drawing method called stippling, where you use dots and the frequency of the dots determines the shading of the cartoon. Well, the next year, Bob sold a remarkable 13 cartoons to the New Yorker, then 25 the following year, then 27, and he became a contract cartoonist. Now he's the editor at the New Yorker. It's rather interesting, isn't it, that a trip or several trips to the library to study what others did led him to stippling as his style, which led to his eventual success. Now, could you do a small thing for your business or life, like studying what people in your industry do or others in a situation similar to yours have done to reach their goals? What if you set aside time to do this? In business, benchmarking is a critical part of helping businesses to succeed. In the first few years of my working life, I worked as a benchmarking analyst. My job was to research and benchmark what other companies and products were doing to win in the marketplace, then bring my recommendations to my company. I learned that watching and noticing and analyzing can help you grow faster. Another, is there a way you could make a small change to go to school, so to speak, on how to be better in your business or happier in your life? Before James Dyson became one of the most successful inventors in the world, he was a young engineer who spent his mornings stuck in traffic, driving to a naval engineering project. He said in a BBC interview that those long commutes were mentally draining. He arrived at work exhausted, unfocused, and already behind. One day, after arriving late again, he made a simple, unglamorous change. He began biking to work every morning instead of driving. And this changed everything. His mind was sharper when he arrived. He felt more energized as he was thinking clearer. He began using his commute as thinking time. And it was during one of these bike rides that he first thought deeply about cyclonic separation, the airflow principle that became the core of the Dyson vacuum design years later. The breakthrough wasn't the bike. It was the change in his commute that unlocked clarity. A billion-dollar idea began with a new way of getting to work. Are there a few new ways of doing things that you could change in your life or business? Can I suggest a powerful change that's simple? You've heard the story of Claire Smith, who made a change in her life and career by changing how she asked questions. Not long ago, I read a book by Marilee Adams titled Change Your Questions, Change Your Life. And in several ways, the premise of this book did change my life. Here's what the author says. The questions you ask, both out loud and silently in your mind, shape your thinking and your decisions, relationships, and outcomes. If you want different results, start by changing your questions. Claire Smith changed her career by changing her questions at work from what am I supposed to do to ask how can I get better? Can you imagine a team of employees all asking genuinely, how can I get better? It would be awesome, wouldn't it? Well, Adams writes, consider three companies, each one driven by one of the following questions. The first, what's the best way to satisfy shareholders? The second, what's the best way to satisfy customers? And the third, what's the best way to satisfy employees? In terms of a business, each question will point that organization in a different direction, influencing, if not dictating, its strategies for achieving goals. For example, in my work, I often ask the question, next time we do this event or activity or meeting, what one thing could we do to make it a better experience? Just that simple question leads us on a path of continuous improvement. Questions can help you make changes in your life. Questions like, how else could I think about this? Or what assumptions, wrong or right, am I making? Or what do I really want here? One of the book's strongest messages is, questions can pull you into victimhood or empowerment. Questions like, why is this happening to me? It keeps you stuck. While questions like, what can I do now? Moves you into agency. Regardless, a simple change of how you ask questions and what questions you ask could, in fact, be the catalyst for larger and more meaningful change. And while we're at this, I'll suggest one more small change. The author of The Notes from the Underground wrote, "Man only likes to count his troubles, but he does not count his joys." Your life, my life, all of our lives change when we start the small change of counting our joys. As you hang up the phone from a phone meeting, think, what are the qualities that you like in the person that you spoke to? Soon you will feel different about them. Reflect on your way to the office of how grateful you are to work where you do. You'll soon feel different. Make positive meaning from your day's meetings, encounters, and efforts, and you'll find you're filled with a different kind of joy. Now, a dozen or so podcasts ago, we mentioned the small change in life of savoring. Savoring is the deliberate post-activity act of looking back on what you've done and taking time to appreciate it. After learning about this, I started purposefully savoring. For example, each week I get the blessing to babysit two of my grandchildren on Wednesday nights while my daughter works. I decided to come prepared for my 2 hours with my two granddaughters. We ride bikes, jump on the tram, do crafts, decorate cookies, sing, read stories, laugh, and say prayers before bed. And you'd be surprised at the richness that it's brought into my life as a result. But the key thing is, when I'm done, I have a 20-minute drive home. And I took that time after I leave to savor. I reflect on the things my grandkids said. I purposefully talk to myself about how grateful I am for this time together with them. I reflect on the joy I felt and how I appreciate the opportunity and how lucky I am to have this in my life. And this act of savoring each week has spilled over into other areas of my life. And the peace and joy it has brought me has been remarkable. I've noticed that after work, I get into my car and out of habit, I start savoring. It has spilled over and over and over to other areas of my life, and I have more peace. It's interesting that I noticed an improvement in my mood and my overall disposition the second I started to savor. Small changes in life. Maybe today, one change in your life that needs to happen is to recognize when something is over. A great author once said, "We don't need to learn how to let things go. We just need to learn to recognize when they've already gone." For example, I used to run every day. My knees and my body won't let me do it anymore. For years, I was frustrated in my exercise because I felt I wasn't doing good exercise because I wasn't running 6 days a week. And the truth was and is, I can get good exercise, but it required I move on from that mindset. I expect there are members of your team, for example, who are holding on to the ways of the past or their times in the past so tightly that it's preventing them from moving on to the future things that they need to do today. So maybe one small thing that could change is to let the past ways go. Let them go from your thinking and focus instead on how to make things now at this time better. When you do this, it's incredibly liberating. It's a small thing again, but give the past its due and move on. Scottie Scheffler, currently ranked number one on the PGA Tour, said, "I'm not worried about winning every tournament or making mistakes. I'm only worried about getting a little better each day. And if I do that, everything else will be taken care of." So here's the thing. Will you try to identify and make one small change? Will you put this to the test? Now, some of us won't try because we don't think we can, and we will say we will get to it someday, but I promise, if you will instead just try, you will find it will lead to change. It may be impossible from where you sit today to think you can change that habit or business. It may seem impossible to think that you could build a team, that you could help your business rise to unbelievable heights, but you can. and it may be hard to believe that you can change that habit that has plagued you for much of your life, but you can. It may be hard to believe that you can change, or your team can change, and you can seize opportunities that you've never thought of before, but you can. And here's the truth of the matter. You are strong enough and smart enough and tough enough and capable enough to change. What you believe is more important than what has happened in the past or what you think you have, what your circumstances are, or what your failures have been. None of those things matter. The only thing that matters is what you believe and how hard you are willing to work for what you believe that you can do and become. You have a choice every day to do what you believe. And I believe you are destined, endowed from heaven, set up at this time to do remarkable things on your team and in your life. You have more power than you think and more talent than what you've used. And despite whatever odds lay in front of you, I promise, with faith, belief, hard work, and God's help, you can begin to make small changes that will pave the way to eventual success. So, as we end today, remember, a morning routine, lunches that matter, a nighttime study block, benchmarking, a better way of asking questions, a bicycle commute, and many other small changes could be made in your life. Remember, your life won't change until you change something about your life. You don't need that massive overhaul. You don't need a perfect plan. You need a simple change in your day, in your routine, in a method, whatever it may be. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend. And join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.